Morning. It's good to be here. We're part of our series of Meet Jesus, Be Transformed. We're going through the book of Mark, looking at little bits where people met Jesus and that transformed their lives. I'm really excited to be talking to you from Mark 5 this morning. First, I wanted to give you a little bit of an update there. Those of you who were here 2 weeks ago might remember seeing me looking quite in pain. My back was really in a lot of agony, and I couldn't really move or do much. Last week, I updated you that my back was still sore, but it had not really stopped me doing much that week. There'd been a big improvement. Last week, I went home on Sunday after receiving some more prayer, and I have had no pain at all since last Sunday. I've been able to go for... I went swimming with Janet. I said, I might not be able to do as much as normal. I pretty much did my full swim. That has really built my faith, really being able to then press in, praying for other things. Some of us met on Thursday night to pray for Claire, but we also prayed for other people who need healing in church. One of the things we were praying for Catherine. One of the specific things we prayed for Catherine was that her potassium levels would go down because they'd been quite dangerously high. I went to see her the next day and her potassium levels had dropped right down. There's still things to go. We need to keep praying. We need to keep pressing in. Catherine's not home yet. She wants to be home. She's still got infection. Let's pray specifically for infection. But we're hearing healing stories. We're hearing God's transformation happening in this place. And let's keep that in mind now as we read from Mark 5, which is two stories of healing, actually. Both examples of people who met Jesus, were healed, and were transformed. Transformation was happening. It's kind of a story within a story. It's going to come up on the screens, but if you want to follow along, it's Mark 5, starting at verse 21. It says this. When Jesus had crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him. My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live. So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed him and pressed around him, and a woman who was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet, instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately, her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out for him. He turned in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciple answered, "and yet you can ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. The woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, she told the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in to where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. So there's obviously two stories here where two people were healed. There's obviously similarities, but there's a lot of differences in the circumstances of these people in this story. So let's have a look at both of those people involved in the story, Jairus and the woman, and see what we can draw out from them. So Jairus, he's described to us as the synagogue leader. So the synagogue leader was responsible for the synagogue facilities, for the security of the scrolls, and the selection and oversight of the worship leaders, and general administration and looking after the synagogue. So Jairus was prominent. He was an insider in religious society, and therefore in society as a whole. We're told his name in this story, Jairus, which is quite unlike the woman. Just giving him being a man gave him position in these times. We don't get even told the name of his daughter, do we? Because he was a man, he was probably quite relatively well off being a synagogue leader, and he was recognised in his position. He was a somebody. Jairus was a somebody. He's named to us as a somebody, a synagogue leader. In contrast, the woman is an outsider. She's a nobody. She's unnamed. Because of her illness, she would have been considered unclean. She's a woman without a man to give her credibility. If she'd ever been married, her husband had probably divorced her by now because of her uncleanness. She was poor. The passage tells us that she'd spent all that she had on doctors who weren't able to help her. So it might be that she wasn't always poor, but at this point, she's poor because she spent all of her money. She's cut off from the religious community. In fact, because of her uncleanness, she wouldn't even be allowed inside of the temple that Jairus was the leader of. She wasn't just unclean, but anyone she touched became unclean. We know that what the Bible says is even a chair that she sat on would then be considered unclean. She was completely cast out from society. She would have had no relationships, no friendships. A little bit like a leper. Dave spoke to us a few weeks ago about what it was like to be a leper, like completely cast out. This is what it would have been like for this woman, because she was considered unclean and people who she came in contact with were unclean. She doesn't count. She was a nobody. So Jairus was a somebody, and the woman was a nobody. And what these two different stories being intertwined with each other highlight to us, that whatever our social standing, whether we're considered a somebody or considered a nobody, we can and we need to meet Jesus and be transformed. Long ago, before I met Paul, I had another boyfriend called Johnny. His background was quite different to mine. He lived in Harrow on the Hill. He went to Harrow School. He had one of those straw Berta hats. If you went to his house, as you drove up to it, you had to drive onto this massive driveway. And then you drove down this massive driveway. And at the side of the front door was these big, massive two pillars. While I was going out with him, his dad gave his mum for Christmas a red BMW convertible. It was quite a different experience to anything that I've ever had before. They had lots of cash to splash. Whenever I went out with him on a date, he'd like go to the cash point. I was like a teenager at this point, and he'd just like draw out like 50, 60 pounds and then take me out for a meal. It didn't last very long, by the way. But it was quite a different experience to anything that I'd had before. And another time when I was round at his house, it was Sunday lunch, and they'd got all these people round for Sunday lunch. And I'm not kidding you, they got out the best silver and the best crystal for this dinner. Like, it was quite a different experience. And we got through the meal, and then we got to pudding, and they brought out this pavlova, and they said, "Zoe, would you mind serving the pavlova, please?" And I just kind of took this intake of breath, because it was just like this amazing, like, meal with all this like silver crystal, and I was like, oh no, because I'm not very good at this. And as I served out the pavlova, it did make quite a mess. It's not an easy dessert, is it, pavlova, to serve up? It's like all that meringue breaks up and all the cream goes everywhere. It was a little bit embarrassing. They kind of lived a different world. They had a different social standing, really, to what I did. The relationship didn't last. It wasn't meant to be, really. But I've got a story to tell. but the great thing about that family was every time I was in that house, there was a real sense that they knew that they needed Jesus. And even though they had all of that stuff and material stuff, there was a real sense that they knew that. And I remember actually being poorly at their house once, and I was really quite ill. And their first response, as soon as I said I was feeling poorly, was that the whole family gathered round and they prayed for me. And actually, that was a different experience for me before, because that wouldn't have always been what my family had done, actually. And so there was that real sense that they knew that in that moment, what I needed was Jesus. And even though they had all of that. Like when it comes to meeting Jesus, actually, the first point that I think we can take away today is that social standing is meaningless. Whether we're rich like Jairus or poor like that woman, whether we're popular or unpopular, whether we're in the in crowd or not, whether others see us as credible or uncredible, or we feel credible or uncredible, whether we're known by name or whether we're unknown, whether we've got a big house or no house, whether or not we're able to competently slice a pavlova, we can come to Jesus in our point of need, and we need to meet Jesus in our point of need. And I don't think it's a coincidence that these two stories are woven together to demonstrate that to us, that whoever we are, whatever our background, we need to meet Jesus. But what these stories also show us is that whatever our social standing is, it's risky to come and meet Jesus. Risk is inevitable. So Jairus, who was the synagogue leader who had social standing, that meant that he had really close ties with the Pharisees, and they hated Jesus. Last time Jesus had visited a synagogue, earlier on in Mark, in chapter 3, verse 6, that had resulted in the Pharisees and the Herodians plotting to kill Jesus. And then when Jesus next goes to a synagogue, in the next chapter after this, when he's back home in Nazareth, the people there take offence at what Jesus has to say. And actually, the account in Luke says, again, that they tried to kill him. It was not socially acceptable in Jairus' circles for him to go to Jesus. They hated Jesus, the people who he associated with. It was definitely not socially acceptable for him to need Jesus. The people, his friends, his bosses, they despised Jesus. It was likely that synagogue leaders like Jairus were pressured by the Pharisees to not support Jesus. But yet Jesus came. He didn't just come, but it says he fell at Jesus' feet and he pleaded with him. In his time of need, he risked everything. He risked his position, his power, his social standing, his security, his job, his relationships. He risked everything in his time of need to come to Jesus. And maybe that's the position that you come in today. Maybe being a Christian and making the right choices, becoming the good soil that Paul talked about last week, perhaps saying that you believe in healing is risky for you. It makes you, in your peer group, seem needy. A lot of people say, don't they, religion is just a crutch. Maybe believing in Jesus, being a Christian, means that you lack credibility among your peers in your workplace or social situations. You might be risking losing your friends who think you're a little bit crazy. Some people might even risk losing their job to be obedient to what Jesus said. Avril, at the moment, is going through a real battle with her workplace, because she's standing up for justice and what she thinks is right in that workplace. And in some senses, that's a real risk for Avril and for what she's doing. And maybe next time we have a kind of transformed in the world, I'd really love to hear some more of Avril's story. But ask her about it, because she's taking a risk in her workplace, in the people around her, by standing up for what she knows is right. And maybe that's the position that you're in today. And you need to take some risks to stand up and speak out, or to come and kneel before Jesus in front of the people you're in relationship with. Jairus risked everything. But equally, the woman risked everything in a different kind of way. In one sense, she had nothing to lose. She'd already spent all the money on doctors who had actually caused her more suffering. She didn't have any money. She didn't have any power. She didn't have friends or relationships. What did she have to lose? What more could she lose? What could make a situation worse? But let's consider for a moment that this woman had not been allowed to touch another person for 12 years. She'd had no physical contact with another human being. She knows that if she did that, it would make the other person unclean. If she, by going and touching Jesus' cloak, that would make Jesus unclean. She was completely socially isolated. I don't know about you, but I think if I'd not been in contact with people for 12 years, I'd have some pretty strong social anxiety going on. Let me just tell you the story of Steve. As a teenager and a young man, Steve had a lot of friends. He socialised a lot. He was a DJ. But as he got a bit older, his friends were a bit more well off than him, and they started to leave the area. And he didn't have much money. He came from a working class background. He wasn't earning much, doing a bit of DJing. And he ended up in a bedsit on his own. He was cut off because of his circumstances. And as he got into his late 20s, the loneliness felt so engulfing that he could barely speak. He craved the company of friends, but when they visited, he gave them cold cups of tea to make them leave. This is what he says. He said, "I'd be at home, absolutely desperate to see somebody, but then all I wanted was for them to get out. I tried to get rid of them as soon as I could by not talking to them, by being rude, by giving them the cold cup of tea, all the while knowing that it was not the thing I wanted." And Steve quickly grew isolated. He grew paranoid and agoraphobic. He was unable even to pick up the phone to tell the landlord that his toilet was broken. When he got work, he says he did well at the jobs, but he had no chance with the people. He was in a state close to panic whenever I had to talk to others. I'd lost touch with all my old friends, even the one who had always been a lifeline. And he managed to get all his worries just down to one: loneliness. I felt hopeless and resigned myself to living the rest of my life this way. When we're cut off from people, anxiety builds. It becomes harder to connect with people. It like becomes this invisible wall that's so risky to cross. And like Steve was saying, it was too much. He pushed people away then because he wasn't close to people. Maybe it was like that for this woman as well, if she's not been in contact with people for 12 years. And she went into a crowd. She went into a crowd. There's no way that she could have got to Jesus without going through this crowd of other people and touching others. And there's no way she should be in a crowd. She would be allowed in a crowd. She wasn't welcome in that crowd. What would it have felt like for her to walk through that crowd to get to Jesus? We know from experience from food bank clients or people coming to Cafe 22 that when people are isolated or lonely, it takes a massive step to make contact again and to get connected with people, to walk back into a place and engage with people. She was taking a huge risk by walking through that crowd. She probably could not even imagine that Jesus would welcome a touch. Why would he? It would make him unclean. But just in her time of need, just like Jairus, she became willing to risk everything to get to Jesus. And actually, she went one step further than that, because when she touched him and Jesus felt his power go out of him, he said, "Who did it? Who did it?" And she could have just hidden away, actually. I mean, she probably had figured out that Jesus knew who it was, but she didn't. She stepped forward. She stepped forward and she owned up. She said, she came forward, and it says in the passage that she told him everything. Bear in mind, this is in front of all of the crowds. This is in front of everyone. They've not all just disappeared. She told him everything. She admitted her problem in front of all the crowds, who now, because she admitted it, knew her problem, and that she knew that they knew now that she'd probably touched some of them and that would have made them unclean. That wasn't going to make her very popular, was it? But she made herself really vulnerable in that moment and came before Jesus. And maybe that's where you're at today. Maybe you know that you really need to meet Jesus and allow him to transform you, but that's going to require some vulnerability. It's going to mean that you need to admit some things to God and maybe to others that you really struggle to even admit to yourself. Maybe to meet Jesus today, it's going to require stepping out and sharing your life, to move in more into Jesus and more into his family, to becoming part of that crowd of people who are around Jesus. Maybe it's going to require coming before Jesus and telling him your big problems and asking him to help, to inviting him to transform you, inviting him to change the situation that really feels helpless. Whoever we are, there is always a risk or a cost of coming to meet Jesus. whether we're risking our job, our wealth, our social standing, our popularity, what others think of us, our feelings, or whether the risk's being brave and making yourself vulnerable and saying, I'm going to do this, whether it makes me anxious or not. If we're going to meet Jesus and meet him in a significant way, risk is inevitable. And Jesus told us that, didn't he? He said to his disciples, if anyone would come off after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life would lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake would find it. Jesus always said it would be hard to follow him. He didn't try and pretend otherwise. It's risky to come to Jesus. There's always a cost. But this morning, what risk are you willing to take? What cost are you willing to pay in order to be transformed by Jesus? The third thing that I think we can learn from Jairus and the woman was that although they were willing to take this risk out of desperation, they came in faith. The woman was driven by desperation. She spent all her money on doctors who couldn't help her. In fact, it said she'd suffered much at the hands of the doctors. They'd probably made it worse, in fact. She was absolutely desperate. But in faith, she said, if I just touch his clothes, I will be well. Jairus, he was driven by desperation. His daughter was not just a little bit poorly. She's about to die. Her death is imminent. And there's nothing left that he can do with all his wealth, with all his status. There's nothing that he can do. But he comes in faith to Jesus and says, come, put your hands on her and she will live. Both of them had certainty. They weren't saying, I might be well, or I have a chance, or she might live, or this is the last hope, I might as well give it a try. But they said, I will be healed. She will be healed. They said, if I can just touch Jesus, if she could, you could just come and touch her, one touch from Jesus would change everything. And they knew that with certainty. And do you know that with certainty? This morning, I've really been challenged on this week as we've been praying for healing, praying for Claire, praying for Catherine, that these people, often we do come and we say, if it's your will, or maybe this could happen, but these people, they were praying in all certainty that one touch from Jesus will change everything. These are both situations where it feels like there is absolutely no hope. The doctors can't do anything. The little girl cannot be saved. And can you imagine being Jairus on that day? Jesus has said he would come. He's coming with you to your house to touch your little girl and for the healing that you believe will come. And then he stops. He stops to deal with this woman and interact with this woman who's a nobody. While anything could be happening to Jairus' daughter, couldn't he? She's at the end of her life and Jesus is here dealing with this woman. Can you imagine being Jairus in that situation? You'd be getting pretty frustrated, wouldn't you? While that's happening, it meant that Jairus' daughter died because Jesus is messing around with this woman who it's serious, but she's dying. She's dying here. That must have been frustrating for Jairus. But what Jesus does in that moment when the people come and say, Jairus, stop bothering him, he's dead. Jesus turns and says, don't be afraid, just believe. And Jesus in that moment, he challenges Jairus' fear. So that when it seemed like there was no hope or what little hope was slipping away, it shows us that in those moments, it's not just possible, but it's necessary for us to have faith, to not be afraid, but just believe. And actually, because Jesus stopped, because he waited, because he healed that woman, a greater miracle could happen. It was not just a healing then, it was a raising from the dead and an absolutely amazing, bigger demonstration of God's power. And sometimes maybe we can take from that actually in the waiting, there's purpose to that. That because we're waiting, because Jesus is seeming to do other things and not come straight away, that there's going to be a bigger demonstration. We should not lose hope. We should not be afraid, but keep on believing. In this passage, there's a distinct link between faith and healing. That when we have faith, healing can happen. And actually, in the next chapter in Mark, when Jesus goes to Nazareth, it says he couldn't do any healings because of their unbelief, because of their lack of faith. And it doesn't actually say in the Bible that every time there's faith, there will be healing. We know that that is true. We don't understand why it's true. But what we do know is that there cannot be healing without faith. There won't always be healing when there's faith, but without faith, there can never be healing. Faith is necessary to healing and to our transformation. When in this passage, when it talks about healing, the Greek word used there is sozo. What Jairus said was, come and soothe my daughter, which is kind of that Greek word, sozo. And when Jesus said to the woman, your faith has healed you, what the Greek word was sozo, your faith has sozoed you. And sozo can refer to healing and delivery from danger. But actually, in the Greek translation of the Old Testament, sozo was used to refer to the salvation of Israelites. And in the New Testament, later on in Paul's letters, they use it to refer to salvation, this word sozo. So its literal translation is to save, deliver, or rescue from great peril, or to be kept safe. So we can see why it was used in this situation, because both Jairus' daughter and the woman were being saved and rescued from their situations, which in that context meant healing. But in other contexts, that can mean other things as well. In faith in Jesus is what does that. In this case, it was physical healing. And I think actually there's faith rising in this house among us for healing over these last few weeks. And let's keep pressing into that and praying and raising our faith for that. But actually, sozo links salvation and healing. There's a spiritual and a physical thing. And God is concerned for every aspect of what's going in your life. So what do you need faith for right now? Where you need God to transform your situation, to sozo you? Where do you need him to rescue you? Paul spoke last week about like the three areas of the flesh and the world and the devil. And this kind of sozo word kind of encompasses all of that, that God can rescue us from all of those things from the flesh and the world and the devil. So where do you need faith this morning to take a risk that Jesus will come through for you? Because Jesus is concerned with every part of our life being transformed. And the good news is that he tells us in the Bible, doesn't it, that when we ask for more faith, God will give it to us. So let's ask for more faith today. Because faith means everything in transformation and healing. So in a minute, we're going to respond. We're going to ask, where do we need to be brave enough this morning to take a risk? And where do we need more faith? But first, I just want to add a little PS, little postscript, that Jesus was willing to take a risk in this passage and to reach out. The woman touching him made him ritually unclean. But when he talks to her, he's not bothered about that, is he? He's not saying, how dare you touch me? And he didn't go off then to perform all the rituals in those days that they would have had to do to make them clean again. And actually, the significance of by the time you get to the girl of her being dead, that meant now that she was unclean as well. She wasn't when she was alive. But being dead in those days made you ritually unclean. And anyone who touched a dead body then became ritually unclean. But yet, it says he took her by the hand. In both instances, Jesus was violating the law and he was doing what was taboo in order to bring healing. And Jesus did not mind being ridiculed. It says in verse 40 that they laughed at him when he said that the girl was just sleeping. When he declared that truth, they laughed at him. He didn't mind that. He didn't mind being laughed at. He was prepared to break the mold, to do it a different way, and to not worry about what people thought. And it's kind of a bit of a paradigm because we know that although that looks like a risk, Jesus wasn't actually taking a risk in those situations at all. What he was doing is showing that he's above what people think that he should say and do. He is God. Rather than being the object of ridicule, he was laughing now after that little girl got up and walked. And rather than being made unclean by these women who were unclean, he makes them clean. No one could then accuse him of being unclean, could they? Because he'd made them clean. No one could accuse him of being defiled if he removes the cause of defilement. And so when we come in that point of need, he meets the need and he declares to the world that he is king and he is Lord over sickness and over sin and over death or whatever area of our life needs transformation. And when we come and take a risk and come in faith, Jesus touches us. And this passage shows us that no one is excluded from that. No matter what labels we or the world put on us, we're transformed. Neither of those women were too unclean for Jesus. And no matter what we've done in our lives, that is not, none of that is too much for Jesus' transformational power. We can be transformed, and then that transformation is evidence of God's power and his goodness and compassion. Our transformation points to God's power, and that's for us, but it's also evidence for the rest of the world. At the end of this passage, Jesus said, go and tell no one. The reason he did that was because his time hadn't come yet. It didn't stop people going and telling people, but we are living in an age where Jesus' time has come. It has come, and so when Jesus, he's not saying to us, don't go and tell anyone anymore. It's our job to declare it to the world, to declare his transformational power with our words, but also because our lives are visibly different and transformed. So this morning, whatever your social standing in, whatever situation you're in, whether you see yourself as the in crowd, the out crowd, clean or unclean, rich or poor, let's this morning decide to be brave, to take a risk, to have faith in order to let Jesus transform us.